Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The city of Vermilion thrums this week with the energy of art. The Painting Vermilion Red Art Exhibit features the work of USD alumnus J. Stephen Manolis. He's donated 7 paintings to USD, which are valued at $550,000. The University of South Dakota College of Fine Arts hosts 3 nationally renowned art critics for a symposium today. They'll talk about contemporary art and the art of J. Stephen Manolis. Let's introduce our guests one by one. They're here with me in the studios in Vermilion. First, Anthony Hayden Guest is a writer. He's a cartoonist and art critic who splits his time between New York and London. His writings have appeared in the Financial Times and New Yorker. Anthony Hayden Guest, welcome.
Hi. By the way, not those magazines anymore, but never mind. Hello. I'm delighted to be here. Am I kicking off?
Well, let's go ahead and introduce everybody else before we do, so we know who's in the room. Bruce Helander is an art critic, arts writer, curator, and artist whose specialty is collage and assemblages. His work is in more than 50 museum collections, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Indeed. Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be here. You know, I grew up in southern Minnesota, and I understand your radio waves go all into the Dakotas and a little bit off to Minnesota. And a little bit to Iowa, so if I have any friends out there that are still hanging in there, hello from Bruce Helander. Delighted to be here, really.
Also with us, Elizabeth Sobieski. She's a freelance writer specializing in the arts. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post. She's written for publications including the New York Post and Cosmopolitan. She was a contributing editor to The Art Economist. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Lori.
All right, let's start with J. Stephen Manolis first. An alumnus of the University of South Dakota. I want to know what kind of person he is before we really get into his art.
He's a remarkable person. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the word I would use. Success depends on hard work and motivation, ambition. It doesn't matter if it's in business. Doesn't matter if it's in the arts. As long as you have a point of view that you want to go after, it can happen. Stephen had the DNA of, he wanted to be an artist early on in his life, and I think his parents talked him out of that to have a more practical opportunity to make some money. And so he was at the business school here and ended up being the youngest partner in Solomon Brothers, he stuck to it, and he went in there and they said, "You're too young, we're not going to hire you." And I remember him telling me, he said, "You know what? I'll be the first one there and the last to leave." And indeed, he was a great part of their success. So it's interesting that you could spend a career in finance and then switch over very successfully, I might add, as a great painter.
And at a later age. How common is it for someone to begin really creating art and putting it into the world in their 60s, is that?
He didn't begin in his 60s.
Tell me that story. So it's the classic late bloomer story, instant success story. Find the truth.
Steve Manolis has had other careers. He also is in your local Sioux Falls Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because while he was a student here, he was one of the most successful rock stars in this part of the world. But all his life, he was painting. And he studied assiduously with the great colorist Wolf Kahn for 40 years before he felt that he was expert enough, before he felt he had mastered his work in such a way that he could present it to the world.
I would say something about this also, that it's a very modern phenomenon for late careers of that sort. The old guild system in the arts is it's not totally gone, but it's kind of melted somewhat. You started young, you were apprenticed to somebody, then you... Now, the notion of quote-unquote creativity has become much more liquid. I mean, take somebody like Steve Jobs. People have become aware that one can move across from one profession to another. If all your life you've harbored these talents and these ambitions, it's not abnormal anymore to suddenly really bud as a writer or a painter. It's a truly a modern phenomenon.
So in the evolution of that career, it makes sense that if you were a success in one area, that if you put the same muscle into another profession, especially with his background and the kind of ambition that he has, that you could become a painter of some note. And he has. He's had critical acclaim. The show, by the way, for those out there listening, is a fascinating show of very large-scale paintings. When I say large-scale, some of them are 8, 9, 10 feet. They are of an abstract expressionist vein, which essentially means it's a non-narrative context other than symbology in his work. These are kind of celebrations of color, and in fact the show is called Red World, and most of the paintings are red. So we always thought that was an interesting connection, because vermilion absolutely means red. Lewis and Clark were kind of canoeing up the river at some point and stopped where Vermilion is now, as a matter of fact. And some of their notebooks show that they were particularly interested in the reflection of the sunset on the red. And then also they're thinking, red, vermilion, and so on. So it's a beautiful kind of context. It's hard to visualize paintings over the radio, but these are wonderful, dazzling, abstract pictures that have a lot of layers of color that really, when you first walk into the gallery, there's a kind of a visual vibration that's very exciting. And he did most of these paintings in Miami, where he has a 5,000 square foot studio. It's really one of the great studios in Miami. And he's one of those artists that appreciates the advantages and the influences that he had in South Dakota. He was born here and raised here and went to school here. And he, like I, appreciate the Midwestern work ethic that we gained and applied to other circumstances. So that's why it's so exciting and so unusual for the university, which, by the way, is located right here on the USD campus at the Warren M. Lee Center for the Arts. And the show is going to close tomorrow, so you better hurry if you get a chance to go over.
Elizabeth, tell me something about the history of red in art.
Well, the history of red, red has always been used in art, going back to cave paintings using different clays and ochres and whatnot. But red is very unusual as a subject for male painters. Joseph Albers, the great color theorist, the greatest color theorist to ever lived, aside from being a painter who sometimes painted in red, said that red was the most difficult color for a man to paint. And red is when you think of some contemporary women artists, Barbara Kruger comes to mind and Kusama comes to mind, they paint a lot in red. But aside from Robert Rauschenberg, who was a student of Albers and was challenging him by painting a red series, Stephen Manolis is the only male artist to do a major red series, which is kind of incredible because there's so many white series and black series, and he's created about 40 or 50 paintings in red. But red is such an interesting color. Bruce, in his essay in Red World, the book of the Red Painting series, which will be available on Amazon in mid-November, speaks about how Queen Elizabeth I died from painting her lips red because of the lead in the red. People have always been attracted to red. Red is hot. Red is sexy. Red indicates something special. Red letter day, a red carpet. Red is also linked to blood and violence, but also to candy and valentines and beauty. And the red door can lead to a day of beauty at Elizabeth Arden, but also to a prostitute. Mm-hmm. Or in feng shui, it means a lucky, happy family.
So it's a kind of a mixed bag of all these interesting connotations with this great history of red and then these magnificent paintings, all basically done in tones of red. So it's a great kind of combination of things.
I'd like to add something to that.
Please.
Which is red is, back in my college, I remember, if you had a little red car, that was the one that stood out. Blue cars were nice, green cars were nice, but red was the startling one. Also, all colors have context. I mean, red is the color of blood, which can mean life or death. Red is the color of fire, similarly. There's an old folklore thing in my country saying, red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning. Red is a very, very violent and paradoxical color. And incidentally, the remarkable thing about the Manolis show is that I've been to group shows, including ones in very prestigious, that killed an artist. I'm not going to say who. Mm-hmm. I saw a group show in the Guggenheim. I thought this person's been making wallpaper all his life. Mm-hmm. This show is more like you look at a cathedral. The repetition of color builds. It becomes very powerful. It becomes like walking through a symphony.
Bruce, you wrote that the two most important uniquely American cultural contributions to history are jazz and abstract expressionism.
Boy, that's a bold statement
am
if I ever heard one.
Am I quoting you correctly?
It is very close. It is almost exact that, you know, our culture came as a kind of an evolution from European culture and other kinds of influences. But the two purely American aspects of that are truly come from an American presence are abstract expressionism and American jazz. And the interesting thing about that, when you think about jazz is a kind of abstracting of notes. That normally a jazz artist will start out with one piano note like Thelonious Monk and then go to it. An artist like de Kooning or Pollock would start with one gesture or one drop and then build on it. So these are the two things that these artists changed the world by inventing a process of painting that didn't have to have a picture or a story or a narrative part to it. And American jazz was able to use intuitive wisdom in putting notes together in an abstract way. Both of these came at the exact same time. They both surfaced at the same time, abstract expressionism and jazz. So it's quite an interesting observation.
How important is process to Stephen Manolis?
Anthony?
The process is hugely yes. important. Mm-hmm. And you know... abstract art, curiously, when you've got a figurative painting, you've got a lot of clues. You can see if somebody can draw, you can see if they've got an instinct sensibility. When you look at an abstract painting, you've got nothing to go on except your instinct. What you see in those paintings is not just visual, there's a lot of thought going into them. You know that there's hidden narrative there. You may not be able to figure it out. Maybe you're not supposed to figure it out, but you know there's an intensity there, and you know that every painting is a bit different. You know that some have a positive aura, some deal with negative emotions. I mean, it's they're really dramatic in that sense.
Elizabeth, let's talk about risk-taking in art today, in 2017.
Well, many artists, especially when you see the ones breaking out in New York and Los Angeles, they're often very conservative and don't take risks. They look into what is stylish at the moment, what is selling at the moment, and Steve Manolis is taking a risk, not a financial risk, as he's an established figure in business, but a risk in terms of being an abstract expressionist painter, because that is not the direction most art is going in, and yet it's an extremely valid, as Bruce said, American art form that exists like no other, and he's an extraordinary master. Donald Cuspid said that it's just completely unusual for someone to emerge as a master fully formed, and that's what he has done. And he's a maverick. He is a risk taker.
So we talked a little bit about, sort of selecting or finding or knowing the right time to release and say, this is what I have been working on. How do artists come to that decision? When do you know it's right to have an exhibition to show your work? And when do you know, mm-hmm. look, I'm still making wallpaper. I need to do something else.
Well, it happens at all different kinds of stages. I mean, I saw an artist at the Miami Art Fair last year who was 17. Brilliant guy. He's completely sold out. He just had a different slant to what he was doing, using cartoon imagery in a kind of pop art context. Other painters wait for years, decades, until they feel that they're ready. Oftentimes, it's critical acclaim. Oftentimes it's an artist who gets lucky and sells pictures because people find that they're attractive and they want to have them. I think most artists, especially, you know, even in the art department here at USD, that their ambition is to make it in the art world. It's a very difficult thing to do. And it's all a question of timing, and it's a question of having a full control of your identifiable style. All of the best artists that are successful, even contemporary artists like Jeff Koons or Damien Hirst, Jim Rosenquist, whatever, they've all found a little niche. They've found something that they developed since they were in high school and in college. So it comes out at different times, but it's mostly the recognition that here is an artist like Steve Manolis who's making something extremely interesting and now idiosyncratic. That is, you're able to recognize his style. If you were driving down the road and you saw a painting in a window, in a split second you say, there's a J. Steve Manolis picture.
Right. And as Bruce was saying, mentioning Jeff Koons was another artist who had worked on Wall Street prior to great success as an artist. And another person who shares that history with Koons and Manolis was Gauguin. Gauguin was a stockbroker, very successful for over a decade prior to becoming the Gauguin of,
so again, you know,
which
work
he became
ethic?
because the Paris stock market crashed.
Isn't it?
So he said, "I'll be a painter."
Yeah. So work ethic, is that the thread that sort of weaves through there? Is it something
Robert Rauschenberg? I once talked, and he was one of the greatest American artists, bless his soul. And I said, "You know, what is the secret to the success? I mean, you've done so well." And he said, "There really isn't that much of a secret. It's just very, very hard work. I work day and night all the time." Steve Manolis, same thing. I mean, I've gotten emails from him at 4:30 in the morning. He's already there painting, so he's excited to get going. Because this is a second career, he's condensing decades into, you know, a few years of activity. He's working all the time. And I think if the secret is the harder you work, the faster you get there, and you're willing to take risks. I always love this quote from Evel Knievel. He says, there's no risk, there's no reward. And so he's out there taking risks with marks and things on his canvases. And I think that's what makes him completely unique. That's why everybody's talking about him. And I think it's a great opportunity for those out there listening to see this show in South Dakota that is really superb craftsmanship in painting.
Ben Hogan, the great golfer, said, the more I practice, the luckier I get.
I know you want to hear more with these panelists. Go see them at USD, the art that's been donated to the University of South Dakota. What a huge gift for USD, for students, and for folks in South, for the whole state of South Dakota to come.
Oh,
Bruce,
I agree.
Do you want to
Thank
give us
you.
The final, you had a list of what all is happening with the art show. I've got October 6th at 2 p.m. in the Munster Center, closing reception 4 to 6 in the Warren M. Lee Center for Fine Arts.
It's quite an itinerary. I mean, I know tonight at 7 o'clock, the three of us are doing a critics symposium at the John Day Gallery. We are also involved in some in meetings with students tomorrow. But the main thing is to see the show. And if you can get over to this evening at 7, I think there's some great perspectives being offered.
And the Red Works books comes out in mid-November, so check for that as well. Bruce Helander, Elizabeth Sobieski, thank you. Anthony Hayden Guest, thank you so much for being here. We really
appreciate
your time.
Thank you.
Enjoy South Dakota.
My pleasure.
Thank you.